In 1990, Doug Wilder was sworn in as governor of Virginia. He was also lieutenant governor of Virginia before he was governor. And then after that, he was the mayor of Richmond after he was governor. And right now, he's on the phone with us. We're going to talk about his autobiography. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. How are you, Jane?
I couldn't be better. And I'm so delighted to have you on the line with us. First question. You have had a very long and very varied career. So this is the year you decided that the autobiography needed to be published?
Well, I have been encouraged through the years to write something, and I kept saying, okay, you know, I'll get to it. And then it dawned on me, hey, old buddy, if you don't hurry up and get to it,
So I thought
it was time, but in coincidental with that, the timing couldn't be better to show where we are in America, where we have been in America, and what the possibilities of potential there are.
Well, you refer to yourself, well, the title is Son of Virginia, A Life in America's Political Arena. So you are, first and foremost, a son of Virginia.
I am that, and that's something that I say to people now when they ask me, say, well, you know, what makes you? I say, well, I'm an American, first of all. I'm not African-American. I'm not black American. I'm an American. Both my parents were born in America. Their parents were born in America, and I think that's the definition of an American. And yet, I want to show that the grandson of slaves could be elected by the people of Virginia, which in and of itself says a lot and did say a lot to a lot of people. But when you consider that the majority of the Virginia voters are not of my color, not of my ethnic persuasion, and yet it adds further to that oddity. Think of this. I was elected to hold a seat in the capital of the Confederacy, a seat that Patrick Henry held and that Thomas Jefferson held. And that, to me, is a story that's worth telling because it says, Virginia led the way in so many other things, so Virginia can lead the way in the reformation of the nation to show the possibilities of individual potential. And Virginia was the first state to show that it could and would elect a person to that highest position of governorship than any other state in the country.
We're talking to Governor Doug Wilder. So, Governor, why do you think Virginians got behind you and made you the one to break down these barriers?
Well, first of all, Virginia was always a leader. We were founded as a nation in Jamestown. The British surrendered in Yorktown. Lee laid down his arms in Appomattox. And so a new era was ushered in Richmond. All of these events took place in Virginia. And so Virginians were saying, look, you make the case, and we will show you what we are made of, who we are as a people. We can't live in the past, and the only way you can escape that is to show that you're going to relate. I took the time, as was pointed out in the book, to go to every independent city and every county in Virginia against the wishes of many people who said I was wasting my time, including people of my own race. And yet, I knew the people of Virginia, those that I had met through the years, were not consigned to live in the past. They wanted a Virginia future. And I spoke of that in the book, and I pointed out as to some of the people that helped pave the way for that to take place.
Again, we're talking to Governor Doug Wilder, his autobiography. Well, when is this in stores, Governor?
The book was scheduled to come out in October. It's supposed to be October the 1st that it's going to be coming out in stores. Some of the media have already gotten their copies. Jane was saying to me she hadn't gotten her copy yet. I started to tell her,
right.
Hey, look, I just got mine last week.
Your story is a very interesting story. And, you know, the grandson of slaves, obviously, and that. But you started out working your way through college as a chemistry major.
Yes, I did, and I was so concerned with the fans of what was taking place around the world. I was watching what was happening, and you know, this is right after World War II when I went to school. My brother was in the Army. I had seen what was happening. I was watching what took place in the military, and in the book I point out that when I was drafted into the military, I had a degree in chemistry, but this was the first opportunity that I ever had to learn from whites and living with whites, eating out of the same mess kits, living in the same quarters. The Army had become integrated, and the armed services, rather, had become integrated. And that new experience for me was just, I can't describe it to you as it affected me, but it showed me that, look, wait a minute, if you can do this in the military, you can do this wherever, and any place. And so when I came out, and I was impressed with the military commander, and I speak of one of them in the book who made it clear that the policies of integration were going to be upheld, and if there were any concerns, let him know. And we did that, and he followed through. So when I got out of the Army, came back, I worked for a couple of years as a chemical lab technician in toxicology, and I liked it, but it didn't grab me. And when Brown versus the Board of Education decision came down in 1954, boy, that just said to me, I've got to get into the mix, the social mix. And so that prompted me to go into law school.
That's interesting. When you say it prompted me to get into the mix, you just wanted to get in there. And what was your, at that point, just to get into the mix and go to law school, but what were your aspirations?
I wanted to be a part of the decision-making process. And I say that to my students at Virginia Commonwealth University when I instruct them, the polity, to be a part of that group which makes the decisions for others. You can't be an effective leader unless you know what leadership is about. And leadership, to me, is a tautology. It defines itself. It means to lead. And so rather than to look for others to always take that role, be a part of that yourself. Be a part of determining who those people would be. And I used to always say to myself, rather than to be so concerned about the slice of the pie, the political pie that's going to be cut, why not have your knife, your hand on the knife that cuts that pie? And I said, let me see if I want to do some of this. I had a very successful law practice. And I didn't go into politics to try to better my law practice. As a matter of fact, it interfered with it. I didn't go into politics to try to better myself financially because, as I said, it was very successful. But I didn't feel that the people who were supposedly representing all of the people in that government that Lincoln speaks of, for, and by the people, I didn't feel it was there. And so I wanted to see something change in Virginia, and we did make any numbers of changes. And I point out in the book that when Chuck Robb was elected in 1981, he really started what was then considered a new Democratic Party in Virginia. He reached out, and we worked together, and that change took place. And then it was like, as I've described it, quicksand. You take one step. The more you know.
And there you are for the rest of your natural
life.
And here you are.
Right. The book is called Son of Virginia, A Life in America's Political Arena, and we have to take a quick break. When we come back, within a very few moments, I want your take on the entire political scene in the United States. Okay?
Wow. In just a couple of minutes.
It'll only
time,
take you 4 minutes to tell me.
Not a
right.
problem.
We'll be right back.
We're talking to Governor Doug Wilder.
We're talking to Governor Doug Wilder. His autobiography, Son of Virginia, A Life in America's Political Arena, should be out this week. I think that's safe to say, don't you, Governor?
Yes, I do.
All right. You are not exactly thrilled with what you see as today's leadership in the political arena, right?
No, I don't. Well, I'm not. The political system in America is broken. And if you start off with that, then you have to say to those who refute that, tell me why it isn't. when you look at these debates, I'm sorry, those things that masquerade as debates that occur on television, the questions that are asked are so asinine. When you ask, well, how would you like your Secret Service to be? What would you like your code name for your Secret Service to be? Are you kidding? When you've got
really
people looking for jobs, staggering debt for college kids, when you've got a lifestyle being threatened, when we have no idea as to what's going to take place, and the only question that people are asking politically, oh, how much money have you raised? Will you be able to have enough money to last? And when you see these things taking, going on, the question is, who are the people that are going to ask the real questions? That is, our debt. I made a speech at the University of Virginia at the commencement for my youngest daughter. And in that, I said, that generation was going to be called upon to take care of their parents. That would be the beginning of something new. That was in 1985, 86. Look where we are now, with youngsters having to take care of their parents or to plan for them because the bottom is falling out financially. And so unless, and I teach this in my classes as well, my one-word definition for politics is money. You name any proposition that doesn't include money, and I'll debate you and show you where it does. Having said that, are we really addressing that now? We are paying a part-time Congress full-time salary. Sometimes they work. And yet, the things that they get caught up in and argue over are not things that will benefit the average American. And that's why, no, you're absolutely right. I'm not at all pleased with the political system, and that goes to both parties.
Well, Governor, it also appears, living in Virginia my entire life, that, I mean, our state politics has become just as bad as the national politics. I mean,
you're absolutely right.
I mean, acrimony is not the word to describe what we have going on in Richmond these days.
Look, you don't call people names. You don't say that side. I never considered myself reaching across any aisle. I never saw the aisle. When I spoke to the joint session of the General Assembly, they're all sitting together. How they divide themselves is up to them, but I don't see them. I invited Republicans into the office, Democrats into the office. I made certain that there were no sacred cows anywhere to have to be protected, and that's one of the things, you're absolutely right. If you see it at the national level, you'll see it at the state level, and the local level is where, as Tip O'Neill described it, all politics is local. That's where the trash gets collected. That's where the streets get policed. That's where the schools systems exist, at the local level. So spending all of the time at the national level, ignoring what takes place at the state and local levels, is a mistake, and you're absolutely right. It's not a question of who takes over. The question is, what do we do now? How do we stop money from being that great intrusive influence over the decision-making process in our government, national, state, and local?
So how do we do that?
By electing people that are not going to pay hidebound to that. By electing people and having the media, for the most part, insist on discussing the issues and the things that matter most. That's why I really was referring to the asinine questions that were asked during some of the debates. Some of them were good. Some of the debaters were good people. But the American people are many times considered to be out of the loop. They're not sophisticated enough to understand. I have always felt that the greatest thinkers in America are the people, and they never get the credit. That's where you get the ideas, not from the pollsters, not from the pundits, but from John and Mary Doe out there in the hinterland. They can tell you because they have the effects of it. And I think, and quite frankly, that's why you see the so-called millennials being upset. That's why you see outsiders in the Republican Party leading in the polls. That's why you see Bernie Sanders taking on so much support as the Democrats are concerned. People are upset with leadership, and that leadership has not shown that it is really involved with expressing the will of the people.
Governor, we are running out of time, but I have your phone number, I want you to know. So as this presidential election goes along, we want to talk to you some more. Is that okay?
I look forward to it. Good to talk with you both, Jane and Whit.
It has been most delightful, Governor. Thank you so much.
We look forward to it.
Bye-bye.